I mentioned last week that part two on the Sabbath series was going to split into parts two and three. So now this is part three. And that this portion of the series would basically get into, if you will, the nuts and bolts of how to keep the Sabbath day. There are a number of keys to Bible understanding. There is actually a reprint article I think we produced way back a long time ago on the seven keys to understanding the Bible, and certainly the Sabbath is one of them. If you do not understand the Sabbath, of course, you're not going to be in touch with God, and as a result, you're not going to understand much of anything else. So if you don't keep the Sabbath or don't keep it properly, then you have lost or missing out on perhaps one of the greatest keys to understanding everything else in the Bible. The fact that the Sabbath has been counterfeited into Sunday, which is in effect kept by many, less of course than in the past, as the Sabbath, is, like all other doctrines of Satan, a counterfeit of the truth. I was reading in this morning's paper about this basketball player who's here from Brazil, and he's training in Cleveland. He's supposed to be one of the best power forwards in the upcoming draft. He's 6'10 and 264 pounds, and they were talking with him, interviewing him. He was saying he's a very devout Episcopalian, and he's trying out for a lot of teams, I guess sort of showcasing himself around the country, and some of them wanting to come in on Sunday and practice, show them what he can do, and he doesn't want to do it. Now, he wants to play in the National Basketball Association, which means he's going to have to play on Sunday, but he was making the comment that he really does not want to practice on the Sabbath day. And, of course, he meant Sunday and said so. He sees it as the Sabbath. So Satan has counterfeited the Sabbath because he hates it. We'll talk in a moment why he hates it, but if he cannot convince people not to keep it, then the next best thing is to hide the meaning and the principles that govern how to keep it so that people observe or keep it wrong. The Sabbath is perhaps one of God's greatest blessings, and if Satan could cause people to keep it improperly so that they do not enjoy and experience that blessing, then in fact, he has also marred people's ability to benefit from the Sabbath. Now, a lot of questions arise, and some people did send in questions. I'm going to read from one particular very thorough list to set up the kinds of questions that people have on their mind. This is perhaps one of the best lists I've ever seen. I've been giving sermons on the Sabbath, about the Sabbath, of course, give them all on the Sabbath. But I give sermons about the Sabbath probably for close to 30 years, I would think. I don't know when I first preached on the subject of the Sabbath, but I think it was about 1972, maybe 73, might have been 73. And the questions that are addressed in those sermons are pretty much the same. The Sabbath has never changed. Human beings haven't changed that much. The kinds of issues that address how to keep the Sabbath don't change. The principles that govern, we're going to go into about five of them, that govern how to make judgments about what you should or should not do, or how much of things you should do, you can do, of things you do, are principles that have never changed. In originally preparing the very first sermon that I gave on the subject of how to keep the Sabbath, as opposed to that you should keep it, but how to keep it, as opposed to the commanded assembly part. Remember, we're talking about now how to keep it. Nobody's going to worry about any of this if they haven't proven the Sabbath is God's test command. They don't believe the fourth commandment is in effect. All of this is useless. But once that's been established, you once again come back to how do you do it? Well, if you're going to answer the question, you've got to let the Bible answer the question. Otherwise, I would be standing up, or you would be standing up, or anyone just stands up and says, I think it should be this way. I think it should be that way. This seems reasonable to me. Somebody else, well, that seems unreasonable to me. This seems reasonable. Somebody else might say, I think both of those are unreasonable. My feelings tell me this. And the Bible says there's a way which seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. Now let's establish something, brethren, before we go on. As a kind of a summary from the first 2 weeks, and yet at the same time, it needs to be said again, as a way of encouraging you to recognize you can answer these questions. Let me say it very carefully. God commands we keep the Sabbath. Surely, that same God would not leave us in the dark about how to do what he has commanded. If God commands that we pray, the Bible teaches that Christians pray, he wouldn't say, now you have to pray, but figure out how to do it. Study to show yourself approved before me, but you figure out how to study the Bible. Christ said in another place, then shall my servants fast. He was asked, why don't your disciples fast like we do? The Pharisees said, we fast all the time. One guy was bragging that he fasted twice in a week in a prayer that's recorded in Luke. Christ said, well, my servants will fast when I'm gone. God commands us to fast. Well, what would be the point if he doesn't tell you how to do it or why to do it? The Bible teaches meditation. We're explaining all these things in the next pillar. We're going into them in detail. Well, if you don't know how to meditate, what's the point of being told that you should meditate? What point would God make if he commands us to keep the Sabbath? Says it is the test command. If you break it, it's willful sin. But you figure out how to do it. And then I'm going to judge you for whether or not you figured out what I didn't explain to you. And yet we will find, when we look at some of these principles, they do not cover every single point or question that could arise. God expects that within these principles, with the Holy Spirit leading you, you will be able to make wise judgments. Sometimes the wrong judgments, but you will learn from them. So with that backdrop, recognizing that God not only commands you keep the Sabbath, but would never be so unreasonable as to tell you to figure out how to do it on your own without his help, we will proceed and look at five broad principles that govern the Sabbath day. There are probably other principles that could be enumerated. There are times I've gone through this and thought, well, you could add a sixth one. This could be a separate principle. This could be a principle. There's more than five scriptures that govern the Sabbath, and within them there's other points, and we're going to bring some of those other scriptures up. But in fact, there's probably, at least from my perspective, the best way to summarize the Sabbath is through five broad principles. If you keep these straight, remember them as God says them, you will find they answer most all of the questions that you will have. And then at the end of that, you may need to counsel, which is fine. Ezekiel chapter 20. Ezekiel 20. In this context, the overall chapter, frankly, the whole book of Ezekiel, is a warning. You've heard the term the Ezekiel warning. I've given sermons on it. Mr. Armstrong spoke on it many times. And of course, Ezekiel is very blunt as God's prophet about what is going to happen to the modern lands of Israel because of certain sins they have committed. That is the overall backdrop. Ezekiel 20 is about in the middle of the book. So in verse 11, Ezekiel 20, we read, and I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments. Of course, this book indicts the modern nations of Israel for having broken all God's laws. It wasn't because God didn't give them. I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. God says, if you say you're going to obey me, and I have given you my laws, including statutes and judgments, that is a way of life. You live in them. In the world, people talk about, well, yes, I have religion in their life, in my life. It's kind of like I have my life, and a part of it is religion. That isn't the way God views religion. Religion is your life. There is nothing you do in your life that is not governed by one or another law or principle or multiple laws and principles of God. Religion is not a room in a house of 10 rooms. Religion is the house. Anywhere you go in the house, you might be in the bathroom or the kitchen or the living room. I'm using an analogy. You might be in the bedroom or the basement. You are still within the realm of the house called religion. You live the principles of God. Now, of course, in a world where people see religion as a Sunday morning or a Wednesday night, midweek kind of affair, that's why they go Wednesday night. It's halfway, 3.5 days from Sunday morning, and that's sort of, you know, you get churched in the churches of this world that way. They sort of see religion as compartmentalized. It's a section of life, not life as a way of life. With that backdrop, moreover also, I gave them my Sabbaths. We heard about that 2 weeks ago. And here's the point, to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctifies them. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They walked not in my statutes, and they despised my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. He repeats it again. And my Sabbaths they greatly polluted, which means, let's just say it bluntly, the Sabbath can be polluted. Frankly, it can be greatly polluted. Then I said, as a result of that final act, then I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them. So the Sabbath is a sign between God and his people. It is a weekly reminder. Let's say it this way, so you put it in your mind this way. Today, you are reminded that you and I, we are reminded that we are God's people. We are also reminded that God is our God. Can you begin to see immediately why Satan would love to see no one ever keep the Sabbath? Because if it's a sign between God and his people, and you don't keep that day, you can't point to, because the day does this automatically, you can't point to who the true God is. As soon as you lose track of the day that is a sign pointing to the true God, you'll lose track of who is the true God. The world does not keep this day. They do not know who the true God is. Of course, Revelation 12:9 says the whole world's deceived, and Satan has been so successful at that, that 2 Corinthians 4:4 says that he is the God of this world. He's completely deceived the world into keeping the day of the sun, the sun's day. And all the days of the week are named after pagan gods, you know, sun's day, moon's day, Chewie's day, Woden's day, Thor's day, Frigga's day, and Saturn's day. People don't even see the pagan overtones on top of so many obvious things done every day in life. This is the Sabbath. It's not Saturn's day. But if I were the devil, I would give it the name Saturn's day. I would want people to focus on Saturn or Chewie or Woden or Thor or Frigga yesterday. I wouldn't want them focusing on the true God. I read, I believe, a week ago, might have been 2 weeks ago, I ended one of the sermons with the comment, the 19th century scholar who once said, more than the Jews keeping the Sabbath has kept the Jews. That's because of this verse. The Sabbath is a sign between God and his people. The other tribes don't know who they are because they've forgotten the sign. The Jews do not serve God properly. They've ignored the entire New Testament and vast sections of the Old Testament. A lot of them don't even keep the Sabbath, but Orthodox Jews do, and most businesses in Israel shut down, and Jews around the world, of course, they were prophesied to be scattered, in some cases keep the Sabbath, and in some cases don't. But at least they know they're Jews because they know enough other Jews are keeping the Sabbath. They've never lost the sign of their own national identity. That scholar was right. Exodus 31. Exodus chapter 31. Now we read this last time. We're actually going to look at several verses that we read last time, but this time we're going to look at them from a different perspective. Verse 12, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak you also to the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. Now God said, I gave you my Sabbaths to be a sign. Remember we read that in Ezekiel 20? Well, here's where he said it's a sign. Didn't start in Ezekiel. That was written nearly, probably 900 years after this account. Throughout your generations, you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. It is holy. We won't read on through, except verse 17 once again reiterates, it is a sign between me and the children of Israel, not just the Jews, forever. So principle number two is that the Sabbath is holy time. Now the best analogy I've ever seen is as good today as it ever was, and so I'll use it. Since somebody has put two glasses of water up here, I'll illustrate with the illustration that was shown to me 36 years ago when I learned about the Sabbath. Now, this one is not as full, but assume it was full. Assume they were identical in every way, this little wider glass. They both have water and ice in them. Now, if they looked exactly the same, again, there's some slight differences, but anybody hearing the message won't see those, you do, but I'm trying for illustration to say they're exactly the same. And you were told that one of these two glasses of water was holy and the other one was not, and they look the same, you smell them, they both smell like water, they're both the same temperature, they're both the same amount of water in them, they're full, or if you want to stretch the analogy, there's seven glasses. And you're told one of them is holy, and they look exactly the same. You would not know which one was holy unless somebody said it's glass number and then pointed at it. Now, in the case of the Sabbath, it's glass number seven. But you have to be told the Sabbath is holy. Now you know. Okay, this one isn't holy. We're told that it's this one, so it's this glass right here. Now we know. We're going to handle this glass a little differently, aren't we? If you knew that's a holy glass because God said so. Granted, you say, well, it looks like water to me. I mean, I've seen ice before, and that looks like ice, and glass is glass. But God says, no, it's holy. It may look the same to you, but it's not the same to me. It's different. And if he said that, in other words, the Sabbath is holy time, it may feel like Tuesday afternoon, it may feel like Thursday evening, both involve time, it might feel like Sunday night, but it's different time. Don't go by how it feels. Don't go by how it looks. I am telling you, this time is holy, and it starts at sundown Friday night to sundown Saturday night. Don't go by your feelings. Don't go by appearance. Because I'll tell you, brethren, if you're sitting on Saturday afternoon at home, 1 o'clock, eating lunch, or you're sitting at home at 1 o'clock on Wednesday, and you just sit there for a moment and just say, how do I feel? Is there a difference? You will not feel a difference. You can't see holiness. You can't chew it. You can't hanging on a hanger like a coat. It's not a car you drive in. You can't touch it. You can't smell it. It requires a revelation from God that it is holy. No man could figure it out. Let me tell you what happens in the world. The world looked at Saturday and said, it doesn't feel any different. And along came a lot of people with some doctrinal sleight of hand, some scriptural hocus pocus, and they suddenly said, well, Sunday's just as good. And people said, well, it feels the same. Why not? And 2 billion Christians trundle along after that empty logic. So, great overall principle number 2 is God reveals to you that this day is different than the others. Not because it feels different. After you have done things habitually different for years on the Sabbath will feel different in that sense. Because your habits, your patterns are different. But you can't feel holy time. God tells you it is, and then says, now it's a test. So that's great principle number 2 that governs decisions you will make. Number 1 was, the Sabbath is a sign. It points me to you, you to me, you to understand about me. And of course, God's not going to forget about us. So that's number 1. Number 2 is holy. Here's number 3. Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. Now these are very basic, brethren, but they are from the mind of God. Mr. Pack didn't invent these. Mr. Armstrong didn't invent these. These aren't Moses' opinion. These come from God. And if you let God's principles enter your mind, you will find they clear up enormously questions about how to keep the Sabbath. And we'll get into the dangers, and things will become so clear where they become so muddy to minds that don't get it. All right, number 3, Genesis 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, set it apart for a holy use. That's what sanctified means. Because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. Great overall principle. Number 3 is that the Sabbath is a day of rest. Now, I alluded in the last 2 weeks to those here who've heard them. The rest of the brethren around the world haven't heard them yet. But those principles, or this principle, is not explained as, well, do you mean just spiritual rest? Do you mean just physical rest? Do you mean emotional rest? Do you mean psychological rest? Do you mean social rest? Mental rest? What do you mean? Well, physical, spiritual, mental, psychological, emotional, social, and every other kind of way. It is a day, I've never heard a better phrase, this is not mine, I'm giving it to you as it was given to me, a day to recharge your batteries. Now, if you can accept on the face, I know we can, we're God's people, accept this, God says it, we wouldn't be here, that God says, I want you to rest. And you understand that it is a day sanctified by God resting, but not because he had to. God said, I'm just beat. I'm tired. I created everything for 6 days. I need to rest. No, he did it as a model for us. I could take you to scriptures where God is neither weary nor needs to be refreshed, but he says he was refreshed as a model for us. He rested, then you will appreciate in this principle alone, and applies to the others, but maybe most this one, the Sabbath is a gift to you. The world doesn't know it's supposed to shut down. Once again, if I were the devil and I knew that human beings were designed to rest 1/7 of their life, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and socially, I wouldn't want them to do that. I knew if they don't, if they won't sit down or lie down or slow down, I can make them break down. I don't mean that as a pun or a play on words. Your body, my body, was designed to rest. Do not ever, brethren, forget the great spiritual principle behind the day. God did not tell you to do it because he wants you to practice boredom for a day, to sit around and learn to be a do-nothing, and then the other 6 days learn to do again, and then for the seventh day, do nothing, sit idly. No, it's a day of rest to actually recharge. That's number three. Number four. Now, as I mentioned, we've looked at some of these principles before, but we're focusing on them in a different way. Mark 2, we looked at this one before. Mark 2. Now, this is a fascinating account. We went through it in some detail, but not the way we're going to do it now. Mark 2, verse 23. It came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said to him, behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? Now, there's nowhere that God says it isn't lawful. As I said a couple weeks ago, that the Bible doesn't say that. God doesn't say that. The Pharisees said that. The Pharisees arbitrarily made a decision that if you pluck, remember I explained it, 2 ears of corn on the Sabbath, you were reaping. You grab one with two hands, maybe at the same time. Doesn't take you a bit longer than grabbing 1 ear of corn to feed yourself. So you grab 1 ear of corn, it's okay, you can take a bite of it. That's feeding yourself. You grab 2 ears, use each hand, now you're reaping, you're farming, you're harvesting. What a ridiculous thing to think. Like you just turned into some kind of human threshing machine, you know. That's ridiculous. But they said, well, we have to draw a line or people will go too far. So they drew a line that felt right. Now, the point is, it wasn't right. And that's something we want to reflect on as we go deeper into the sermon. Here was an artificial standard that was, at a certain point in time, became Sabbath law. People thought it was right. It was not right. And he said to them, have you never read what David did when he had need and was a-hungered? He and they that were with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests, and gave also to them which were with him. In other words, there are overriding concerns. Don't miss the point, is what Christ is saying. Verse 27, and he said unto them, and here comes the point, and then we're going to make some points about it. And he said unto them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Now, why won't people believe, as I said before, that he didn't say the Son of Man, Christ, is Lord of Sunday? Out in the world, they say Sunday is the Lord's day. I'm sorry, but Christ says differently. He says, no, the Sabbath is what I'm Lord over. The Sabbath is the Lord's day, not Sunday. So who would know most about keeping the Sabbath? Christ. Now, this is interesting. But first, let's summarize the principle. God did not have this thing called the Sabbath and said, you know what, I've got the Sabbath, I've got to make somebody to keep it. Here it is, I've got this day, but nobody to keep it. You know what, I think I'll make man, so I've got somebody to keep the Sabbath. Otherwise, it's just going to waste. I've made the Sabbath, but I didn't think about anybody who should keep it, so I'll make man for the Sabbath. No. God said, I have man. I want him to rest. I'll make the Sabbath for him. God didn't. There's no evidence God ever rested prior to the account in Genesis 2. He'd made man the day before. He understood that men were not made of spirit yet. They are not born again in this life. They are flesh. That was born of the flesh is flesh, John 3:6. They need to rest. Flesh gets tired. It gets sick. It gets run down. It needs its batteries recharged. So I'm going to make the Sabbath for man. Now, what happens out in the world is the world makes the Sabbath an end in itself. They worship the Sabbath instead of the God who gave it. They look up to the Sabbath as though it is God. Now God did precede man. The Sabbath didn't. The Sabbath came after man. God came before man. I mean, I'm just trying to be as basic as I can. Now, the Pharisees held, this is one of their doctrines, that oral law was necessary to complete written law. In other words, what they added to it was necessary. So it literally was considered binding law, even though God never said it. Does that sound like the great universal church that, you know, starts at Rome? You need men to add additional points, or revelation is incomplete. Now, brethren, I could stand up here and give you Mr. Pack's list of do's and don'ts on the Sabbath. That'd just make me a good Pharisee. That would make me like anybody else who creates do's and don'ts where God doesn't do it. Some want makeup do's and don'ts, exact, exquisite detail of every question analyzed from north, south, east, west, above and below that question, you know, every possible way you can examine every question so that they can pin things down. Now, we'll come back to that in a moment. But the Pharisees viewed the Sabbath the way some people want the church to rule, like we were the Vatican, on makeup. The church cannot rule on every detail of the Sabbath. And I hope before the sermon is over you will understand why. There are multiple reasons why. The only people that ever did that ruined the Sabbath, made this great blessing into a curse. Now, I've said this maybe at other times. The Pharisees were asked all kinds of questions. Do you think the list of questions I started this sermon with haven't been around for thousands of years in you know, different shapes, flavors, colors, and textures? Of course they have. Human beings have been the same. Questions are the same. I don't think that maybe some things would be different. They didn't ask how much TV can we watch on the Sabbath. How far can you drive in a car on the Sabbath? The questions were different. How far can you ride your mule maybe on the Sabbath? Might have been a different question. I didn't worry about a lot of horsepower, just one horsepower, riding your horse, you see, how far it went. So you'd ask the question like, somebody probably asked a question in the temple one day. Well, now what about corn? And you know, the doctors of the law sat around and said, well, I think 4 ears would be all right. I think one. Well, somebody else said, I think 2.5. Break the third one in the middle because, you know, I think 3 is too many, 2 is not enough. Maybe he was a big eater. I don't know. See, and they go through the different arguments and they finally settle on 1 ear of corn is what you could pluck. Some said you could tie, and I forget the number, how many knots could you tie on the Sabbath? It depends on whether it was me when my mother was trying to teach me to tie my shoes when I was 4. She got so tired of me. I always came out with knots. She put me in the dining room, said, you sit on that chair, David, until you learn to tie your shoes. It was a beautiful sunny day. You are not going outside until you learn to tie your shoes. I don't remember if it was Saturday or not, but if I had been a Pharisee child at age 4, how many knots I could tie in my shoes, and I could tie some dandies. My mother, I can still remember trying to untie the knots in my shoes, and finally I figured it out, but she was tired. She knew that I would. You know, I would have broken the Sabbath. How many flies could you kill? The Pharisees decided, okay, you could kill one fly. 2 was labor. Now, I could see, if somebody's really good at killing flies, I think they could kill 4 while somebody else is still chasing down 1. I mean, you understand now, did anybody raise that question? They didn't ask me because I would have had an opinion. I might have thought you could kill more flies. We got yellow jackets get into our back sunroom, and you know what? If I see them on the Sabbath, I kill them. I don't say, I got to wait till sundown. Matter of fact, I enjoy it. I kill them, and you know, hope they die slow. And I don't know where they're coming in, but I hope they keep coming in. The Pharisees, of course, look at Exodus 16 and say, you can't light a fire on the Sabbath. That means you cannot flip a switch. The Hasidim, these are Polish Jews that basically began in the 16th century. You find them with the curls, the tassels. You shall not rind the corners of your beard. So they have these tassels and long hair and black hats and, you know, kind of hat like Abraham Lincoln wore. And they walk around in black. And they're called the Hasidim, the Hasidic Jews. You know, they will not flip a light switch because there's a little bit of electric current, which is like a spark that's starting a fire. So on the Sabbath, prior to the Sabbath, they go through the house and they decide now which lights need to be on. They turn on the lights before the Sabbath, turn them off after the Sabbath. So they never have to light a fire on the Sabbath. They completely misunderstand the principle. That's talking about stoking an industrial fire to work. It's not talking about flipping a switch, but they look at it, hyperanalyze the verse, and they don't recognize the Sabbath was made for man. And they plunge deep into that kind of thinking. These same people, now look, let's be blunt, because this is true, they pull their toilet paper on the Sabbath. They sit down and think, how many are in the family? How much will we need? They do that, and they fold it neatly. There are thousands and thousands of people in Brooklyn who pulled their toilet paper before sundown last night. And in Israel, and Orthodox Jews around the world. That makes the Sabbath into a curse, and you know what? Anybody who looks at that says, if that's what their God expects of them, I'm going to just be blunt, brethren, this is what they would say. They serve a God who's a kook. Because you laughed at it because, you know why? Because it's laughable. Now, brethren, we have to be careful. That may be our standard for humor. It's not humorous to them. But what kinds of things are you doing that either overextend principles and you're breaking the Sabbath, or overextend rules and you're too far to the right? The potential on the Sabbath for a great blessing or a great curse is there. The Sabbath is a gift to you. It was given to you. It's for you. It was made for you. It's not a day designed as something that is taken from you. The Sabbath is a day often thought of this way. God says, give it to me. I'm going to repackage it. Now here, I'm giving it back to you. Here it is as a gift. Keep it this way. If you just see it as a day taken away, then it's 24 hours to clock watch. All the day, it's the day when you can't do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, just a long list. Great principle number 5, Matthew 12. I mean, it is funny, and yet it's tragically funny. You see why I say, brethren, at the outset, if the devil cannot deceive people about the fact that they must keep the Sabbath, then he can create an even greater bondage in some ways by making them horribly unbalanced so that they misobserve, miskeep the Sabbath. Matthew 12 and verse 10. Matthew 12 and verse 10. Behold, there was a man which had his hand withered, and they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days? Why'd they ask him? Because they wanted to learn. No, that they might accuse him. So is it possible to keep the Sabbath? Is it possible to ask a question about how to keep the Sabbath to try to nail the person you're asking? Do I think that everybody out there who hears this sermon, I hope they're all beyond the, you know, the bounds of restored, do I think that everybody out there will welcome all of the elements of this sermon? Oh, no. Do I think there are people out there who currently are keeping the Sabbath who will, in fact, conclude, you know what? I want to see where Mr. Pack or Restored or the people there, but probably more like me, I'm the target, where they're breaking the Sabbath. I wonder how they'd answer this. Don't kid yourself. People wouldn't ask questions that way. There it is in the Bible, and that's nowhere close to the only time or the only subject where Christ was challenged by people of wrong motive. But yet it long serves, looks like, well, they're just asking about a question about the Sabbath. And I don't say that necessarily everybody who even asked with a wrong motive would recognize that motive at work in themselves. And he said unto them, what men shall there be among you that shall have one sheep? And if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than the sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days, which means the annual Sabbath days. It is lawful. Then said he to the man, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. Now let's stop for a moment, because there's a fascinating point that flows off of this account and Mark 2. Colossians 1, 16 and 18, we can turn over there for a moment and read it very briefly. We have to keep moving. We have a lot to cover. Colossians 1, 16 to 18 says this. For by him, that's Christ in the context, were all things created that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible. Guess what? That covers the Sabbath. It's invisible. You can't see Saturday. You can see what's around you on Saturday. You can't see Saturday. You can't see holiness. You can't see angels. They're also invisible. They're made of spirits. There's more than just holiness you can't see. You can see an example of a person who's conducting themselves in a holy fashion. We are God's holy people. Holy men of old, the Bible says, wrote it. So you are hopefully holy people, but we can't see God's spirit in you. So you understand the point. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or power, all things were created by him, Christ, and for him, the Father. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist, and he is the head of the body of the church, and so forth. All right, now when Christ said he was Lord of the Sabbath, what he meant was he made it. He was the being back there in Genesis 2 who rested, not the Father. Christ made the Sabbath. When Christ came, he didn't just keep the Sabbath because he was a Jewish kid. He kept the Sabbath because he was God. He set the example 4,000 years before his first coming, 6,000 years ago. He's the Lord of the Sabbath in the most ultimate sense. Now, consider this. Those Pharisees asking questions there in Mark about the corn and here about healing in Matthew did not recognize they were asking the very being who had created the Sabbath. They did not recognize that they were talking to the being who made the law over which they had superimposed their own rules. Can you imagine if they thought they were. Now they heard, may I say it this way, absolutely godly answers, perfect, flawless answers. How could they be more perfect than by coming from the one who made the Sabbath? Yet they rejected what he said. They rejected what he said. So then, do I kid myself that some will reject principles in this sermon? Who am I to think, who's Mr. Armstrong or any minister of God to think, that people will believe us simply because we give them the right guidelines, straight out of the Scripture? And we won't say it as well or as effectively or properly, of course, as Christ. No man would. But they rejected what Christ said. So, of course, there are going to be people who cannot see the principles we discuss here. You know the principle of the ox in the ditch. Luke 13, I believe, uses the example of an ox in the ditch and feeding your ox. It might be Luke 13. I'm not sure. Maybe we turn over there because another verse I wanted to read at this point anyway. It has to do with the Sabbath. And it talks about feeding animals there. Luke 13. And verse 10, as he was teaching, and he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. Luke 13:10, behold, there came a woman which had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bowed together and could in no wise lift herself up. She was all crunched up, bowed down, I mean, together in that sense. You understand what it means. She was all crunched up, crippled, and bent over. She had a spirit of infirmity. That's interesting. And when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said unto her, woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. He laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. The ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath day and said to the people, there are 6 days in which men ought to work. In them, therefore, come and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day. How could they think that God would be bound to heal somebody that a Sabbath breaker, in this case Christ, wanted him to heal just because he wanted him to do it? Wouldn't they stop and say, wait a minute, this is a miracle. God heals. It must be okay to do it on the Sabbath. Now, brethren, people don't think that way. People can have the truth of God shoved right up 3 inches in front of their eyes and just plain reject it. Do you not think that if somebody was healed right down there on the floor, a withered hand just goes zoop right out again, that people would say, God did it? Don't kid yourself. If they're hung up, in this case, it shows you how horribly hung up you can be on a misapplication of Sabbath principles. You could conclude viewing that healing through the filter of misunderstanding the Sabbath, that that was a sin, and not even be able, be utterly blinded to the fact that no human being could make a withered hand straight or a blind person see. Just utterly blinded to the fact that God had to do it. So when God reveals principles, brethren, please understand, that doesn't mean that when it's just plain, clear, unmistakable to you and I, it is the same to others. It is not. The Lord then answered him and said, you hypocrite, does not each one of you on the Sabbath day loose his ox or his ass from the stall and lead him away to watering? And ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, lo, these 18 years be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day? And when he had said these things, all his adversaries were ashamed, and all the people rejoiced for all the glorious things that were done by him. Now, it's an interesting point, and it's a sideline. Sometimes you see people who are horribly crippled who are able to stand up at these phony healing revivals. Now you can understand one of the reasons why. Some of them might have had a spirit of infirmity. They were not physically ill. A demon maybe seized the sensory nervous system and the motor nervous system and just crippled them up. He didn't heal her of a disease. He, in effect, cast a demon out and she stood up. So, can Satan heal? No. Can he direct a spirit to come out of a person who has been given a spirit of infirmity, who's bound up, gnarled, and crippled, and out goes the spirit, and the person it looks healed by people who are not of God? Absolutely he can do that. Absolutely. In order to give glory to the false ministers who think that God did it, because those false ministers are his ministers. If an ox is in the ditch, you pull the ox out of the ditch. You know, sometimes there is going to be labor on the Sabbath. Those five principles, the fifth one being that you can do good on the Sabbath if it's an emergency, govern the Sabbath. It's a sign. It's holy. It's a day of rest. It was made for man. And it is okay to do good on the Sabbath. You don't go out as a do-gooder laboring on the Sabbath. Christ was confronted with situations. He didn't go out seeking to do it. He was confronted with situations. There are sometimes a mix of these principles that govern the questions we're going to go through at this point. And I'm going to go until basically the questions have been answered, because otherwise we won't get through enough of them. But sometimes a mix of principles does apply. Now I want to make a statement. following spiritual principles as per the Sabbath and as per everything in life, following spiritual principles yield character. That yields character. Following Pharisaical rules yields an attitude or spirit of legalism. Following spiritual principles yields character. Following Pharisaical rules yields a spirit or attitude of legalism, which is what destroyed the Pharisees. I cannot, brethren, and frankly I would not, give you all of the answers. I cannot, because the Bible doesn't give the answers to all these questions, yet God expects us to keep the Sabbath. He's given us enough to know how to do it. So I cannot, would not, don't have the hours of time to tell you all of the principle, all of the answers from the principles that govern the Sabbath. You are going to have to make some of those decisions, but let me tell you something about you and about me. All of you in this room fall into one of two categories. You are either, as a person, somewhat, we'll put it this way, liberal, tolerant, or permissive. You are, if you will, to the left of what God says, or you are to the right. You are more strict, more conservative, more intolerant. And you have to, from either left or right, conservative or liberal, you know, however ways you'd want to put it, permissive or strict, your goal is to work to the middle. Either way, as we go through these questions, you must be careful. Do not try to pull the Sabbath and how it is kept over to where you are. If you want to pull it over to make it a little more permissive, because that's the way you see it, or pull it over here, bring a little more restraint to the Sabbath, go over to where the Sabbath is. God says it's a sign, it's holy, it's a day of rest, it's for you, and you can do good. Keep the Sabbath, seek to keep the Sabbath the way God wants it kept. Let me put it another way. Listening to these points, you will either in your mind be seeking or looking for permission or for restraint. You will either be looking for freedom or for rules. Once again, either way, be careful. God commands you to keep the Sabbath. He leaves some loose ends out there, I believe, purposely, to see how you'll use that freedom. Will you stretch it? Will you try to break the leash, so to speak, become permissive, seeking freedom? Will you fall backwards into over-restraint, rules, and legalism? Don't do either one. All right. Can you work on the Sabbath? Are there any ways, any times you can work on the Sabbath? Question number one. The answer is no. You cannot work on the Sabbath. I won't go back to Isaiah 58, 13, and 14 again. I won't turn there, but you know the day. Well, maybe we should, but let's just read it again. It's been a couple weeks, and it does apply. We'll reference it more than once, so let's go back and just read it again. Very briefly, very quickly. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure, your work, that's what the old King James means. People used to love their work, and it was called their pleasure. What's your pleasure? People love to go to work. Today, it's hard to understand. People don't like work, so what could be pleasurable about it? They wait for the weekend. That's how they live their life, and wait till 5 o'clock. On my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord honorable. Yes, this could have been the sixth point. It could have been the Sabbath is supposed to be called a delight, but that's really different than the other principles. You can sort of see why, I hope. The holy of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it." Now, you cannot work on the Sabbath. There are some people who are called in an emergency. If somebody is a plumber, and the next door neighbor's house is flooding suddenly, and they call you, "Can you help me from home? My toilet's backed up, or a pipe burst, and it's just ruining all of our furniture in the basement or something." Of course you'd run over and help them if you have plumbing skills or something. Of course you would. Have you labored in a way? Yes, but only in the sense of the ox in the ditch. You don't think if you're trying to pull an ox out of the ditch, which no one man could pull, typical ox would be 1,500 to 2,000 pounds, small one. A young ox would probably be 1,000 pounds. No person's going to pull that kind of weight up. You would hardly pull it sideways. So you'd need a lot of people. But you don't think you'd perspire and sweat and that'd be work? Of course it is. So in that sense, yes, you can work, but only if it is an emergency. You do not do other kinds of work, period, on the Sabbath. Have I ever walked through my lawn, seen a weed in the bed while I'm enjoying the flowers and smelling the lilacs this time of year, and bent over and pulled the weed because it was the Sabbath? Absolutely, I have. Did I say, "You know what, there's lots of weeds, I'm going in and changing, I'm going to come back out and pull weed"? No, of course not. I have thought about how I wish the weeds were gone. Last night, we ran into a little situation. Some people spread our mulch yesterday, a team of guys. I can't do it anymore with my back and don't have the time. I used to do it myself and loved to do it until about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but stopped then. And they got done, I don't know, a couple hours before the Sabbath, a good hour, I suppose, left. And the guy came back, and he'd left something there. And so he thought, "Well, I'll just present the bill." Came to the door, rang the doorbell, wonder who's that. It was 20 of 10, I think it was. And he said, "Could you pay me?" And we said, "No, it's the Sabbath." Wonderful guy, fine guy. We said, "No, we keep the Sabbath. We don't do that. We can't do that." We said, "Oh, well, we don't want him. I don't want to be embarrassed. I think I'm some kook. I keep this. Sure, let's pay him." So, and we had to say, "And oh, by the way, we can't do it Sunday this time either." And one week of the year. And he's Monday morning, he's going to drop by and we'll pay him, and that's fine. That's the arrangement we'd had, that we pay him cash, we don't use a credit card, so he didn't know that we keep the Sabbath. That's not an ox in the ditch. "Well, I can do businesses once a year, you know, I'm not really working." I'm sorry, I can't do that. And I explained it to him, and he came back today, and he had about 15 minutes of work, so I noticed him as he was driving away. I didn't realize what he was doing until he was about to leave, and I heard the truck out there, and I went back out, and I saw him, and he was driving away. There was one bush he hadn't finished, I guess, and so I just said, "I hope you understand what my wife said last night." I said, "No problem. I'll be here on Monday morning. That's fine. Didn't understand." I said, "Thank you," and he left. So kind of an interesting experience. I wasn't about to pay him on the Sabbath. Number two, the preparation day. Turn to Mark 15 for a moment. These are not really numbered, but I guess I'm sort of going through them that way. The next point would be the preparation day. And this could be its own principle, too. As I said, there could be more than five principles. But one of the ways you avoid work is you use the preparation day. Mark 15 and verse 42, "And now when the evening was come, because it was the preparation," that is the day before the Sabbath, and actually the indefinite article in the Greek, a Sabbath. This was Wednesday, I believe, if I've got this correct. It was the day before an annual Sabbath, and Friday and the days before any annual holy day are, in fact, preparation days. They are preparation days. Turn over to John 19. John 19. Verse 14. "It was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour," and so forth. And then 31, I think, maybe references it again. The Jews, therefore, because it was the preparation, in verse 42, there laid they Jesus, therefore, because of the Jews' preparation, for the sepulcher was near at hand. So there is a preparation before the Sabbath or a high Sabbath. You have to use that preparation. Be sure that you take time on the preparation to do things that will make it easier to relax on the Sabbath. A great key to Sabbath relaxation is entering the day knowing that everything is taken care of. Emergencies, no, because life has them. But that things are taken care of. You're ready for the Sabbath. Mr. Armstrong set a wonderful example. He would always do the following. He didn't say the rest of the church had to do it. He didn't teach it as law. This is the way he wanted to do it. It was the way he decided to approach his God on the Sabbath. He would take a shower. He would put on a suit, sit down in a chair, and be relaxing, sometimes with a glass of wine, he said, a half an hour before the Sabbath came in, with his Bible there in his lap, so that when the Sabbath arrived, he was already kind of winding down. It wasn't right down to the last minute, you know, just whizzing around like so many people do, but that was the way he felt he would honor God. Mr. Armstrong, of course, as you know, met one-third of the kings, presidents, and prime ministers on earth during his lifetime. One-third of them he knew personally. And he often used this analogy. Now, these are the greats of this world, as we would define them. He said, if I have two shirts hanging in my closet and it is Friday morning and I'm going to meet with a king, a president, or a prime minister on Friday and appear before God on the Sabbath, I always select the lesser of the two shirts to meet the king or the president, the prime minister, and save the better of the two because I'm appearing before God on the Sabbath. Now, he never said that is a law for the church. He just at times in conferences you'd hear him say it. Heard him talk about it, and that's the way he approached the Sabbath. But I also tell you that, not just because it shows you how he honored God, which we read in Isaiah 58 we should do, but because it reflects preparation, not stampeding up to the Sabbath at the last minute. My Sabbaths are different in many ways than yours. Mr. Armstrong perhaps did it that way because he sometimes had to prepare a sermon on into the Sabbath of the next morning. You don't do that. I do that. That's a kind of a spiritual New Testament Levitical function, if you will. Is that labor? You better believe it's labor. Can you get around it? No. You're commanded to come here and be fed on the Sabbath. How would that be done if I did not prepare some of it? Or if you could even say, well, I think you should prepare it all on Thursday or Friday, Mr. Pack, if you just humanly said that. Nobody says that. That would assume I could keep it in my mind and be ready to deliver it a day later without reviewing it. But number two, it's still labor to give it. I will tell you at the end of giving a sermon on the Sabbath, there are few things in life that fatigue me more than getting ready for and trying to deliver a sermon knowing I'm going to have to help a lot of people. Our other elders would tell you that. The sermonette men would tell you that. If they don't just, you know, give a slipshod kind of, you know, whatever comes out approach, they're going to tell you that. And, of course, none of our elders and deacons, no faithful servant of God, no sermonette man would do that. So it is work. It is work. It is not easy. So that may have been part of why Mr. Armstrong did it the way he did it. But, brethren, what a golden, sterling, marvelous example. Does it say that in the Bible? No. But when I heard it, I never forgot it. I like to unwind and relax before the Sabbath. And of course, winter and summer are different. I think it's maybe 4:58 to 8:58. It's a four-hour swing when you throw in daylight savings time. So you're going to have more time to unwind after you get home from work in the winter. So there are extenuating circumstances. Number three, television. One person wrote a question. I'll read it. Now, we've been taught, in all caps, this is a person coming out of a very severe, strict, almost, to the right of the Pharisees kind of a group. We've been taught never watch TV on the Sabbath. Remember, we have brethren coming with us from all kinds of splinters, some terribly liberal and permissive, some very harsh and restrictive. No matter what it is, that when we watch the news, this is not putting us in a spiritual avenue or attitude. and that our minds should never be centered on anything except prayer and studying God's Word and listening to tapes and being in church on the Sabbath. Well, frankly, that is just ridiculous. That is just ridiculous. God doesn't tell you watch world news, watch and pray always. And you say, well, you know, I really meant watch only 6 days a week. Now, if your Sabbath is watching all news all the time, the same as any other day, you know what? You broke the Sabbath. If you watch just as much, you go on and on and on, and why it's on all day in the mornings. You know, some people, they can't do their ironing unless the television's on. Presumably on the Sabbath, we wouldn't be doing our ironing. But remember, the principles that govern it is it is a holy day. It is a day of rest. You want to recharge. Yes, I sit here and I think, you know, some of this stuff I don't need to see. I can watch certain talk shows other days of the week. But then on the Sabbath, I've occasionally watched, I don't know, maybe 15 times in my life, I've watched a documentary of some special kind. And with our children, when I was teaching them that God created and was the creator, created them and everything, showing them nature, was fine. It was fine. It's not wrong. Do you sit around and watch television all day on the Sabbath? You broke it. Do you watch the national news? Remember, in the summer it wouldn't be an issue. In the winter it might. You know, it might be on. Of course, it would be on most places after sundown. Have you broken the Sabbath because you watched prophecy being fulfilled? Of course not. Do you watch ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, MSNBC, CNBC, CNN, and all, you know, whatever other, and then catch them all so you hear the exact same quotes? Conversation, the question comes up. Turn to Matthew chapter 12. Remember we read back there in Isaiah about speaking God's words. Now you might say, Mr. Pack, you didn't lay out every detail on programs on the Sabbath. That's right, I didn't. I didn't, and I would be violating what I said I would do. You must be careful. We got somebody write a question last week. What about Bible movies on the Sabbath? Well, most Bible movies I wouldn't watch on Thursday. They're junk. They're junk. They show God's greatest servants as nutty, oddball kooks with long hair who talk funny, they show. I remember one movie showed Noah as this shriveled up old kook. That's what he was, and I wondered. If I was Satan, I would think this wonderful. Now, can you learn from some of those movies? Sure. Be careful, though, that when you think of Moses, I mean, I'm illustrating a point, it's humorous, you don't think, oh, sure, Charlton Heston. You know, he often introduces himself as Moses. He has fun with it. You know, he's now taken up the gun cause, and one guy who was an opponent said, how are you going to disagree with Moses? And he's the president of the National Rifle Association. It's kind of like the long-haired Jesus. You have to be careful. When you see those images, they stick. When I was 9, I watched the Ten Commandments 3 times. I kept wanting to see that sea part, you know, the Red Sea part. Matthew 12, 36. Matthew 12 and verse 36. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by their words your words you shall be condemned. The tongue is a potentially a terrible or a wonderful thing, James said. It can set the world on fire. It can speak idle words. Be careful. What is your conversation like? What is your conversation? One person said, we were told not to talk about anything that occurred during the week concerning the stock market, business, finances, and parties on the Sabbath. Probably not good to talk about parties. We're to keep our conversation stretched toward the Sabbath and on prophecy and, you know, what was going to the world tomorrow. Somebody else wrote another question on that subject. Let me see here. I wanted to check it. Here's what person just asked, yeah, what should our conversation be on the Sabbath? Big question, more than could be answered here. But remember, God says, be careful of idle words at any time. It didn't just say the Sabbath there in Matthew 12. Idle words the other 6 days of the week are going to be judged. Useless, empty, vain words All right, the Sabbath again is a sign. It's to point to God. If you're talking about some comedy show and, boy, I can't wait to get to see Spider-Man or Star Wars, and it's the Sabbath, you see, you're telling lots of jokes, which are not a good thing to tell all the time anyway. Yes, you could tell a joke, sure. Never should tell a filthy joke, and certainly wouldn't tell a lot of jokes or maybe any jokes on the Sabbath. Could there be an exception? Of course. And I'm not setting a rule you can't tell jokes on the Sabbath. There could be an illustration. I tell some in sermons if it illustrates a point. But you sit around and tell jokes, or you want to be careful that you don't gossip. I've seen for years and years women on the Sabbath will typically stand in circles, and how would I know it? Because my wife would report it, and other women would come. They talk about babies and the garden and the dishes, and back in the years in Worldwide, and I just would wonder, and I'd give a sermon on it, and not a thing would change. Not a thing would change. And the men would talk about the same kind of inane things, just it was more what men talked about. What was wrong with their car? Or whether they were going hunting, or how big the fish was that they caught, and that kind of stuff. And that was the way the Sabbath was. The Sabbath should point to the plan of God. It should point to God. It's holy time. If you talk about the stuff that is what occupies your mind when it's unholy time, that should be a message to you and to me that we're missing an important difference. Something's wrong. All right? Question about recreation. What kind of recreation can you do? Somebody said, we were told we could never do anything that would be our own pleasure on the Sabbath. Well, let me ask you, wouldn't you say fellowshipping is pleasurable? God says, don't do your own pleasure back there, but it was talking about business. I like to eat, and you know what? The Sabbath's a feast day. I eat. Oh, I can't eat. That'd be pleasurable. So be careful. Be careful of how you view that. Nothing. No canoeing, boating, picnicking, all right? You shouldn't go canoeing. Could you if you lived on a lake? 5 minutes, sit out in a canoe. I don't know. I don't know. Could you sit in a boat? At what point are you rowing? At what point are you fishing? At what point are you laboring? If you had a pool, years and years ago we explained, if you're on the edge of a pool, you own a pool. I had a pool for 1 year. And a big mistake, but it was a lot of work, a lot of trees over the pool, and they dropped everything into the pool. And it was the coldest summer on record in Buffalo, where summer comes on a Tuesday anyway, and it wasn't there on Monday, and it's gone by Wednesday. And so it was not much fun. I sat there. There were a couple hot days, and I thought, you know, I'll just dip into the pool. I get in and out. Have I sinned? Of course not. Most of us would not face that. If you get in the car, pack the kids in the car, and go down to the pool like my mother would do with my older sister and younger brother, and we go down to the pool and swim, you do that on the Sabbath, of course it is breaking the Sabbath. So there has to be a principle involved. No hiking, biking, camping, anything to do with crocheting, knitting, and this person just said there was all this list of do's and those went, goes on this list. And they ask, are those all wrong? In most cases, you shouldn't do any of them. You wouldn't want to do any of them. But on the other hand, could you take a walk? I take a walk on the Sabbath often. Do I walk as long as I do the other days of the week? Because I try to take a walk. I've been falling behind. I've been so busy. But I typically walk about 2.5 miles. Maybe a little less than 2.5 miles is my marked out course. And I move right along. Do I walk 2.5 miles on the Sabbath? No, maybe a third of that time. And I stroll. I don't power walk. If you see some of these people out there, they stride and power walk. Don't do that. But you're out in creation. What more beautiful time of the year to walk than now? Do you stroll out in your lawn? Sure. Do you cut the grass? No. Well, if I walk a third of a mile, you sit down and say, I wouldn't walk any more than that if I was pushing my mower. Therefore, I could mow the lawn, and you see how people could reason and play games. Those are people who are looking to be permissive and so forth. I came home one time on the Sabbath, and a big branch of my tree had broken, and it had bent somehow, and it had started to crack, and it was going to be windy, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to tie that branch back up so it doesn't snap that little tree. It took me about 10 minutes, I remember it, and I saved the tree, although part of it had split anyway. So recreation, the Sabbath is for man. Now you got to be careful that you're not out doing your own thing. You say, well, I want a little recreation. I think I'll go to the Indians game. You cannot do that. You cannot do that. People camped at the feast. Camping is not a sin, but if you're going out on a camp out and it's a party, no, that would be wrong. That would be wrong. So there are guidelines. Could you take a walk? Yes. Could you lay out in sun? Well, which would be better? To be inside, you're not in a I'm just giving you an example so you can understand. Which is better, to be inside the house doing nothing, or outside sunning yourself a little bit with a Bible, enjoying the birds and the bees in the spring? You're not laboring, you're sunning. I'm not saying go sun every Sabbath, because then what you'll be thinking about is your tan. That becomes its own problem for obvious reasons. You know, a lot of people worship the way they look, and there's even danger and concerns that way too. A lot of skin cancer in my family, and these days it's much more dangerous than the sun was years ago. It's a different world. Children playing. Bible games with children are wonderful. Should children be playing on the Sabbath like it's any other day? If so, the question becomes, what are you teaching your children? How is your child learning that the Sabbath is different? Say, well, they're not converted. They're not adults. So I let them play and, you know, run around and tear around. Well, frankly, children shouldn't be running around and tearing around at any time. They're unsupervised and, you know, disorderly and so forth. But on the Sabbath, play Bible games with them. I used to sit my little boys down in these two rocking chairs from the time they were about 2 and 3 years old, right in there, and I would tell them Bible stories. Daddy, tell us about David's mighty men. They loved to hear about David's mighty men, and I would have to tell them stories about Old Testament battles on Friday. And I'd be thinking, man, I'm tired. But I know it's important for them, and they'd have their little pajama sleepers on, and they'd be rocking in these chairs. And now one of them's bigger than I am, and he's got a son, and he was the one who would often go off to sleep if I didn't tell something exciting. And so his brother would poke him, listen, Robbie, listen to this. And so teach your children. Kids will remember that. It takes work. You have to work at it. Maybe ask them Bible questions, Bible games. Play 20 questions with the Bible. Tell them stories. The children of your life should know the Sabbath is special. You know, Jewish mothers typically cook. They prepare the very best desserts for the Sabbath because they want children, not all, but many, they want children to know the Sabbath is special. So if you're a little child, a little five-year-old mind, yeah, special means pie with whipped cream. All right, now maybe that's the way you understand the Sabbath special, but it sticks. And she, of course, does it during the preparation day. Be careful of peer pressure, school functions. I got a letter recently, just a few days ago, from a parent wondering about certain school functions. And it's interesting what kids will do. I watched kids of certain parents go out and break the Sabbath. And I remember so very well how many kids reflected their parents. When I saw kids were breaking the Sabbath, I knew they weren't being taught at home. School functions, though, can be a chance for the light to shine. Kids say, well, there's peer pressure. If they don't see me go, they'll think I'm odd. Well, wait a minute. If you keep the Sabbath, you're odd. There's no way around it. But parents have to try to defeat the no syndrome. It is a problem. For a young, carnal mind, our kids are carnal, if everything is no, no, no. Show them that there's a lot of yeses to the Sabbath. It's a special time, special games, special activities, special opportunity to hear God's ministers, special opportunity to dress up or have a special dessert or play, you know, Bible questions or hear stories. And then the Sabbath, wow, they look forward to the Sabbath. They're sorry when it's over instead of turning into clock watchers like a lot of kids are. Dress, Sabbath dress. The best you have, brethren, is how you appear before God. I've told you Mr. Armstrong's example. We must be very careful in God's church that we do not diminish the proper standards for keeping the Sabbath, because late in front of a Saturday night activity, the dress degenerates. I've seen people at services change their dress. They go into the restrooms. Of course, we don't have that anymore. I saw that in Global, and I put a stop to it. And I saw it, you know, saw it some here. But be careful. I don't take my suit off till sundown. I just don't. Do I loosen my tie? Sure. Sure I do. But I don't. I mean, I relax. Is it a sin to take your suit off? No. But if you're at a gathering with other brethren, you don't go out to your car, change into, you know, your bowling outfit in order to go to people's house on the Sabbath. Can't do that. You're still before God. You may not be before Him at Sabbath services, but you are before God. And we have a custom in the church. The custom in the church is how we dress. Women wear dresses. Now, they may not in the splinters, but you know what? I don't care. The liberals in the 70s introduced pants for women, and they introduced them for open neck shirts for men. The men looked like they were going bowling. I was in trouble with headquarters. I never allowed open neck shirts, even in the liberal years, and I was pressured by headquarters. They left me alone, I think in part because they knew, you know, I was fairly close to Mr. Armstrong, and I just never allowed it. I never allowed it, and it's wrong. I didn't make me special. But now you look at the people who think they've stood up for the truth, and they dress worse than they did in the liberal years of the 70s. You ought to hear some of the stories I hear from people who go to the bigger splinters. The dress is abominable. When we appear before God, we have a suit and tie on if we're men. Women dresses. We stand before God. We sit before God. It doesn't mean when you wear a suit to bed on Friday night. No, of course not. Or you're relaxing at home. I just said you could sun for a few minutes if you wanted to. We were talking about. So there is a balance. Shopping. You don't shop on the Sabbath. Could there be an ox in a ditch, an emergency? People drop by and you don't have anything to feed them. Well, once in 5 years, maybe something could happen. I don't know. People often ask that question. Several people ask that question. Remember, if you're out shopping, you're doing your business. It means you didn't use the preparation day. Oxes can be in the ditch because the ox is standing outside the ditch. You go over and push him in. Say, oh, there's an ox in the ditch there. Well, look at that. I better pull him out. And that's sometimes a lack of preparation. Music on the Sabbath. Remember, it's holy time. One person said, we're only allowed, what the person said, the only music we were allowed to listen to was soft harp or flute music, or the Ambassador Chorale, or classical music. No, that's extreme. But if you're listening to worldly music, it's probably not a good thing. Certain types of music should never be listened to. I gave 4 sermons on rock music back in the 80s, 4 sermons, and that was the 80s. Today, the 80s look tame. Some of these creatures, you listen to them sing, I'm convinced they're in pain. That's the way you explain it. They're in pain. Nobody could make those noises unless they hurt somewhere. They hurt. That's why they sing like that. If we could just give them a painkiller, they'd probably be all right. The Sabbath was made for man, so the music should relax you. It should calm you, but it should point to God, and we should sing out at services, as we talked about last week. I'm trying to move very fast here. There's so much to cover. Acts 1:12 talks about a Sabbath day's journey, and some have, of course, taken that principle from, I believe it's Exodus 16:29, and it was about 3/4 mile. I remember when Menachem Begin, I had to walk to Sadat's funeral. He had to stay in a motel that was less than 3/4 mile from Sadat's funeral. They decided that a Sabbath day's journey was 3,960 feet. That's, I don't know, somebody measure that and decide if you walk over 3/4 mile, you're laboring. How far can you drive? We talked about that last week. Eating out? Sure, you can eat out on the Sabbath. Be careful. The atmosphere can be wrong. There's cigarette smoke and loud music and maybe it's not a nice restaurant. And there's gossip all around you, and people are not conducting themselves in any way that's going to help you focus on God. But can you go out on the Sabbath? Sure, you can. Should you do it every single Sabbath of your life? No. No. But you might stop and consider your wife. Remember, if you go home, she cooks. It's more relaxing for her to eat out. Now, in Belgium, for instance, eating out on the Sabbath, it basically is a sin. I mean, it literally is. In France, some of those countries, because a dinner out is 4 to 5 hours, each course, one at a time. It's a cultural thing. Very, very different eating out there. So I couldn't, nor would anybody, give the same guideline for eating out. Fellowship with people. Wonderful to fellowship with people. But many ask, well, what about your family? Relatives drop by, neighbors. Can you go visit friends on the Sabbath? Some of these different questions came up. I wouldn't do that. You can visit your relatives at other times. Do you let your relatives in if they knock on the door? Well, sure. But you want to guide them to understand, you know, this is the day I keep. And you don't want them to think the Sabbath equals we're cut out. But you want to be careful that you do not water down the Sabbath in such a way that you're just, because they're not going to talk about God. They don't care about any of the principles of God's Sabbath. They don't see it as a sign or rest or for man or do good or anything. They're just there to talk to you. Now, but they're there because they like you, they love you, and if you show them the face of Christianity that says, it's the Sabbath, get out, just be careful. Wean them off of it. Explain it to them. It's a principle. And try to be sure you're doing things with them at other times. Make sure they see it as special. They see your approach to them as special. That's the way it should be with Christmas. We told our children, would you rather have a parent who gives you everything in 2 days? Would you like to know that 365 days of the year and 8 little gifts on the feasts, feast days in the fall, you could get something? Our boy's eyes and our daughter boing like soft-boiled eggs. They look at, ooh, they like that. And their friends used to think, wow, you get gifts 8 days and we only get them one, you know, on Christmas. We had our kids had them thinking that they were getting cheated because they had to keep Christmas. And our boys felt privileged. Our daughter felt privileged. We'd let them go out and pick gifts, and my wife would line the three of them up and hand them their gifts each day of the feast. And, of course, yeah, they were carnal. They wanted to know what was coming Wednesday on Tuesday and what was coming Tuesday on Monday. But we tried to do that, and you can have little things that you do. But back to fellowship, you want to spend time with God's people, because God's people are the ones who are talking about the things of God that are interesting to you, and prophecy and current events and news and development of the work, and did you hear about this and that, and we're growing here and there. I tell you, brethren, I can't think. I being in the work of God now to me is a drug I cannot get enough of. I wish there was 8 days a week. This is going to be the most exciting church on earth to be part of. And it's becoming that way now because we're able to do so much. We're paying the price now, but the crop has not come in for us. Later it will, in terms of what we can do. Prayer and study, by all means, you want to do extra, maybe twice as much, certainly not less. You're recharging your spiritual batteries. Weddings, funerals, and reunions, stay away from them. But could a wedding be conducted on the Sabbath if basically all of God's people were there? Sure, I've done it. But you cannot get into the dancing, the drinking, you know, the music and the partying part of a wedding on the Sabbath in God's church ever. But could the actual service, takes 12 minutes, takes me 8 minutes, 9 minutes, less than a sermonette? Yes, you could. Sure, you could. But you want to be very careful. All the preparation should precede that. And I always explain to couples, the preparation should precede the wedding. If you can't do it, nope, can't do a late Saturday night wedding. Can't do it. Cannot do it. And services, we've already explained, you have to attend. Be careful of bringing produce, you know, handing off people's vitamins and things like that. I don't think we have much of a problem with that in the church. Our groups are too small, but just be careful that we don't do that. And brethren, let's remember the Sabbath is a day of dignity. It is a day that points to the most dignified being in the universe. It's a day that should be uplifting. Sometimes I see people in Sabbath services down through the years, you know, yawning and stretching and, you know, and mouth wide open, and they don't realize I'm seeing them. They're thinking nobody else can see them, but I can see they've had a tonsillectomy, you know. And be careful of chewing gum in services. Not a good thing to do. Is it a sin? We've generally discouraged it because it's disruptive, and it's not a proper way before God. I chew gum once in a while. Very rare, though, anymore. I'm one of those strict mothers who wouldn't allow it. Now, one final verse. One final verse. I know I didn't cover everything, but we have to bring this to an end. Romans chapter 14. Romans 14. And verse 22. Now, we'll pick it up in verse 16 because it's a good general principle. Let not then your good be evil spoken of. Verse 16, 17, for the kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but righteousness and peace and joy in the Holy Spirit. That is a general principle about principles. Getting into eating this little thing, that little thing, and who's a vegetarian, and whether you fast on this day or that, was hanging up people in Rome. The kingdom of God is the big picture, righteousness and peace and joy. For he that in these things serves Christ is acceptable to God and approved of men. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace and things wherewith one may edify one another. For meat, destroy not the work of God, and so forth. Verse 22, have you faith? Have it to yourself before God. If you have a problem with the Sabbath, doing a certain thing on the Sabbath, don't do it. Don't do it. Even though God may say you can do it, it might be a conscience problem for you. Happy is he that condemns not himself and that thing which he allows. And he that doubts is damned if he eat, because he eats not of faith, for whatsoever is not of faith is sin. If you think something is wrong on the Sabbath, that's where your conscience is. It may not be wrong, but that's not the point. You think it's wrong, don't do it. It's a sin. Just don't do it. And don't flaunt in front of others who are newer in the church, who are learning about the Sabbath, certain things that you may think are not sin. Now, in fact, it could go the other way. Be careful, remember, that you are not doing things that are sin, focusing on those who won't do things that aren't. Be careful. Be very, very careful, brethren, that you focus on the God who gave the Sabbath and keep it. Don't worship the Sabbath. Don't ignore the Sabbath. Thank God for the Sabbath and keep it.